This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
You're listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. I'm your host, Jason Staples. We got a big show today. First topic, we're going to grade Everett Golson's season so far. So we're a quarter of the way through the season. I'm going to be grading Everett Golson through three games. And then the second segment, we're going to look at some things from the Florida State defense, answer a couple questions from the Noles Digest boards. So let's go ahead and get right into it, where we're going to, again, grade Everett Golson's season. And I'm actually not going to grade it just as a season as a whole. What I want to do is break it down half by half, because Golson's performance overall has been pretty different across the board. I mean, it's been the book on Golson coming into the season, based on what we had seen at Notre Dame in the past, is that, you know, there was a pretty clear good Everett Golson, and then there was bad Everett Golson. You know, turnover prone, can't seem to do anything right Everett Golson. And I think we've seen both good and bad Everett Golson so far, and oftentimes in the same games. What we haven't seen so far is turnover prone Everett Golson. He hasn't turned the football over through three games, which is obviously something that was a big concern coming into this year. But I think so far that's actually gotten a little bit more, that's been regarded as a little bit more of a positive than maybe it should be. And the reason for that, right up front, before we get into talking about the half by half analysis, yes, Golson has not turned the football over through three games. But last year, at Notre Dame, in a season where he turned the football over constantly, and of course that sort of set the book on the expectations for him this year of whether he was going to be the same turnover-prone quarterback at Florida State that he was at Notre Dame, he didn't actually turn the football over through three games last year. They played Rice, Michigan, and Purdue in their first three games last year, and Golson went without a turnover in three games. Exactly the same as this year. And honestly, I mean, the Rice, Notre Dame, and Rice, Michigan, and Purdue last year. Now, Purdue's terrible, but that's relatively comparable. And last year's Michigan comparable to say, Boston College. Although I think Boston College's defense is better than Michigan's defense was last year, certainly. But Rice is better defensively than what Texas State was, for sure. Texas State is a terrible defense. And, you know, Purdue and South Florida, you could put them in the same breath as well. Although, again, I think South Florida is a little more athletic on defense. But I think that's a pretty comparable slate. So I think it's important right off the bat to hold the excitement that the turnover issues for Everett Golson are behind him. I think that's... It's premature. The jury is still out in that department. I think it's too early to evaluate, oh, well, you know, he hasn't turned the football over through three games, so clearly, you know, you don't have turnover-prone Everett Golson anymore. Because what we saw last year at Notre Dame was a guy who went turnover-free through those three first three games, and then through two interceptions at Syracuse the next week, through an interception at Stanford, through an interception... or Stanford at home, threw an interception against North Carolina, two interceptions against Florida State, and another interception against Navy, and four against Arizona State, and then peppered in, I think, 12 fumbles over those over the course of the last few games of that season as well. So you're looking at a guy who, in the past, what we've seen, you know, you go back to 2012, he didn't turn the football over much in 2012. He threw one interception in his first game, two against Michigan, in a really terrible performance against Michigan overall that year, again, as a freshman, so being in fairness. And then one interception against Pitt and one against Wake Forest. And then he threw one interception, which wasn't actually a bad throw, against Alabama in the national title game. So that was six total interceptions as a freshman. So this is a guy who's gone through phases of really not turning the football over all that much. But when they do come, when they have come for Golson, boy, they've come in bunches. They have really come in bunches. And that's the concern, I think, still. And this is why, to some degree, if we're looking at the season so far, the only way you can really grade Golson, I mean, we're going to grade him sort of, again, half by half. But the season grade is in many respects an incomplete, because we just haven't seen enough to be able to evaluate whether certain things, like the tendency to put the ball in the ground or to throw some bad interceptions, are still there. He has protected the ball better. There's no doubt about that, than he did late last year. But again, it's comparable to how he started the year against Rice, Michigan, and Purdue at Notre Dame in 2014. In fact, I mean, if you look at it, his passer ratings actually pretty closely mirror what we saw in the beginning of 2014. Against Rice at Notre Dame last year, he had a 206.28 passer rating in the season opener. Florida State this year, he had a 230.27 passer rating against Texas State. Now, that was, you know, pretty much all in the second half after the game was out of hand and against a really bad defense. Same thing, Rice was a terrible defense. Notre Dame ran up the score on them. But then against Michigan, they won 31-0. He had a 152.6 passer rating. It was actually better than what he had against South Florida, where he was 119.20. And then against Purdue last year, 133.39 versus Boston College, 117.90. So those are his passer ratings. And again, this is not the best radio to just list off numbers. But bottom line is, they're kind of in the ballpark of what he started last year. And if anything, against South Florida and Boston College, he was not quite as productive a passer, as efficient a passer, as he was against Michigan and Purdue last year. So, and obviously some of that is a factor of, you know, learning a new offense and trying to settle in with a completely different situation at Florida State. And then there have been some issues around him on the offensive line and with the wide receivers and so on. But all that goes to say, I've seen some excitement among a few, and I've seen some articles saying, well, you know, the real concern about Golson coming in was that he'd turn the ball over a bunch, and he hasn't done that so far. Well, you know, I think we need to pump the brakes on that just yet, because until we see a little bit more, we won't know whether or not that is just part of the ebbs and flows of what we've seen from Everett Golson in his career so far. And that's, you know, that basically, I don't know that we'll know the answer to that, answers to those questions. I think we'll know a lot more in that sense once we see Golson play a better defense against Miami. I don't think Wake Forest is necessarily going to give him much of a test this weekend anyway. Although, you know, again, we look at, he turned it over twice against Syracuse last year. There's so many parallels to this last year, because the bye for Notre Dame came between their third and fourth games last year, and he came out against a really not a very good Syracuse team and turned it over. I think he had four turnovers. If I remember right, he had two fumbles on top of those two interceptions. They had five total turnovers as a team. I do remember that, but I think two of those fumbles were his. So four turnovers against Syracuse after going turnover free through 3 weeks and then a bye week. Well, Florida State has gone 3 weeks and then a bye week, and now they're going to play, not an especially good defense, more in the average area, and we'll see whether or not there continues to be progress in that regard. Now, it is worth noting, some of you know that I also do I also cover some other teams, and one of the teams that I do some work for is I do some analysis on North Carolina. And I've been breaking down a little bit of Marquise Williams' film, North Carolina's starting quarterback Marquise Williams' film, over the course of the season. It's been interesting to see some of the issues mechanically that he's had, because I see a lot of the same flaws in Everett Golson's game, and I don't think that it's coincidental that those two guys both worked with the quarterback guru George Whitfield, who people, again, who've listened to this show and have paid attention to my work in the past know full well what I think of George Whitfield, that he's a snake oil salesman, and that I've yet to see any quarterback who's worked with George Whitfield get appreciably better on the field after working with George Whitfield. Yes, he's worked with some really, really good quarterbacks. But how many, my question is, how many has he made better? And I don't think, I haven't seen him make anybody better. I've seen a lot of guys basically go out and work with him and stay what they are. And at the same point, I do see some mechanical flaws show up at times in guys that he has worked with. And this is one of the things that hopefully over the last 2 weeks, up leading up to the Boston College game, you know, you got 2 weeks to do some additional work, some fundamental work during that bye week. One of the issues that Golson was having, particularly in the last 2 weeks, is his hips and his foot positioning when he would throw, particularly when he'd throw things, you know, simple throws to like bubble screens and flat routes and things like that. His hips were all over the place. And, you know, if your hips aren't in line and if you're not transferring your weight properly, you're not going to put the ball in predictable, consistent positions. You're not going to be as accurate as you need to be. And that's something I'm confident. I know from talking to some people at Florida State that this is something that the coaching staff has been really frustrated by and is really trying to work with him on, is some of that sloppy footwork and really working with him on getting those hips underneath him to make accurate throws. Because when his hips are underneath him and when he's actually got good positioning in terms of mechanics in that sense, the guy can really spin the ball and he can throw accurately. But when he gets those hips out of whack and he's just throwing all arm, then the ball gets scattershot, and then you have things like what you had against USF. So quickly, let's go ahead and break through. I'll go ahead and grade, give my assessment on what Golson has done so far this season. And basically, the way I would grade it is this. The first half against Texas State, I don't think you can even really give him a grade. I think that's an incomplete because he didn't throw the football, but a couple times again in the first half against Texas State. And he basically just handed it off to Dalvin Cook and the others in the backfield who dominated. You watch the young offensive line dominate a severely overmatched Texas State defensive front. So, you know, that first half, they were able to run it all over him, do what they wanted, and then step back and give him a chance to basically do what he needed to in a passing scrimmage in the second half. Now, that passing scrimmage in the second half, he actually looked pretty good. He had time to throw. He was accurate with the ball, didn't throw anything that put the ball in danger. There's not one throw that you thought, oh, wow, you know, he threw into coverage or whatever. And you look at his numbers, 19 of 25, 76%, 302 yards, 12.1 yards per attempt. I mean, those are all off the charts numbers. But, again, it's against Texas State. And, honestly, in those situations, I don't know that he ever had to go past his second read at any point against Texas State. And generally speaking, his first read was open every time he looked. So, again, that's kind of an incomplete. But I would say, given that that's his first start, given that we're looking at a second half where they're starting to work on some specific passing concepts and things like that, I would actually have given him somewhere around a B. In the second half against Texas State, maybe even a B+, because I thought that the accuracy in general was very good, or was at least good. I don't know that I'd say very good. It was certainly not Winston type accuracy, but it was good. He controlled the offense, was, you know, had good composure, did what you would expect from somebody who's a fifth year senior and has some game experience. And I thought in general he outperformed performance expectations a little bit in that game. So we'll say maybe a B+ against Texas State in that second half. Now against South Florida, it was the reverse. In the first half, they tried to throw the football a little bit, tried to open some things up against them, and Golson looked terrible in that first half. And it wasn't just in the passing game that he looked bad. Against South Florida, it looked to me like he got in a feedback loop. And this is the one thing that concerns me, I think, moving forward about Everett Golson. As I mentioned before, he's had tendencies when his turnovers come, they come in bunches. And one of the things that I've been told about Golson in terms of how he sort of processes and how he takes coaching and how he handles things, this is a guy who really cares. He cares a lot about his performance. He cares a lot about not letting the team down. He wants to make, you know, he's somebody that takes a lot of things personally. And in a lot of ways, basically what I've been told is he's very similar to EJ Manuel in terms of how he handles things as a quarterback mentally. Now, EJ was, I think maybe a brighter guy. EJ's a very smart guy. That's not to say Golson's not a smart guy, but EJ, anybody who's been around him knows that EJ's a very bright guy. There's a reason he was a first-round draft pick. EJ also had a little bit more tools in terms of talent, physical ability to throw out there as well. But one of the things that EJ really struggled with at Florida State was when he would make a mistake, or when he wouldn't, when he wasn't doing things exactly right, he had a tendency to sometimes go into a funk. He would let the last play affect his next play. So there would be times where he'd get rolling and all of a sudden everything was great. But then there were games like the 2012 NC State game where things got a little bit, they went sideways a little bit, and all of a sudden he's missing reads, he's holding on to the ball too long, he's not trusting what he sees, and it gets into a little bit of a feedback loop. And the same sort of thing seems to be the way that Everett Golson works. And I got that from inside the program as well, that there's a lot of similarities there where the last play affects what he does the next play. He has trouble. That was one of the things about that made Jameis Winston so good, is Jameis Winston could make a mistake, and he made a lot of them, especially in that second, in his sophomore year. He made quite a few mistakes, but then he'd come back and he would totally have forgotten it and would go on what he saw, trust his read, and make great throws again. And in fact, he'd just get mad and get better. With Golson, the danger is that he turns it over once, and then he starts to be that guy who's thinking about what he shouldn't do. Oh, I don't want to turn it over. I don't want to do that. I don't want to. And, you know, of course, Fisher puts a lot of pressure on his quarterbacks, which is generally a good thing in terms of performance. And we can see that. I mean, he's had great performance from his quarterbacks since he's been at Florida State and well before that. But when you've got a guy who takes things that seriously, that personally, and can let things affect you like that, or let things affect him like that, that makes it complicated for somebody like Fisher, who wants to get on you when you make a mistake and say, why did you go there? What are you seeing? And so the guy may double clutch and think about it and so on. And then Fisher, of course, is yelling what he used to yell all the time at EJ Manuel. Just play. Just play. Just let it loose. Turn it loose. Stop thinking and just play. And of course, then you get a guy who overthinks and lets the last play, take over and affect the next play, and you tell him to just play, and that's precisely what he has trouble doing. So my concern moving forward with Golson is precisely that. And we saw that, I think, in the first half of the South Florida game, where he got in that feedback loop. He made a couple early mistakes, and I think what happened, especially in the running game, he made some bad reads. He didn't make the proper check. He missed his check. You know, he's supposed to run to the right on this one against this front. He runs to the left. He's supposed to run to the left on this, and he hasn't run to the right. He misses the zone read pull on this one. You know, he throws it in the dirt on this one, and everything just spiraled, and you could see just sort of in his demeanor and in his eyes that things were... the feedback loop had kind of started, and it was just like, oh, what should I do? He just looked hesitant. So in that first half against South Florida, I would give him an F. I think that first half against South Florida was awful, not just as a passer, but in terms of running the offense, in terms of understanding everything. But the second half of the South Florida game was very different. Second half of the South Florida game, I thought he played much better. He got more run checks right. He still missed a few, but you could see he got calmed down, and this... there's some indications at this point that Fisher may have learned a little bit from how things went with EJ Manuel, and how he struggled to get through and earn EJ and kind of lost EJ Manuel's trust as when EJ was a senior, and he struggled to get through to EJ in some of those cases. And it looks to me like he's still putting a lot of pressure on Golson. He's still expressing a lot of frustration with him, you know, from some of the practice reports that I've gotten. The leash is getting a lot shorter because he can't, at a certain point, you can't repeat the same mistakes over and over and over again in checks and in 2-minute drill and making certain decisions that are just baffling to Fisher. And, you know, Fisher's pulling what's left of the hair island out over this. But it does seem like against South Florida, they were able to get him calmed down. He was able to come back out And I would give him in that second half, you know, I thought he played much better. I'd give that maybe a B minus in the second half. I thought that was fine. That was acceptable. It was good enough to win in most games on Florida State's schedule, nearly all the games on Florida State's schedule. If they get second half of South Florida against everybody else, they're probably going to win all but maybe two games on their schedule with that Everett Golson. It's not great Everett Golson, but it's a lot better than that first half, which was an F. Then you go into the Boston College game, and it flips the other way. First drive, you give Everett Golson probably an A-. Worked the wrong side of the field on one play. But other than that, you look through. He made some excellent throws. The throw on the corner route to Kermit Whitfield was excellent. The touchdown throw, he fit into a tight window. Footwork was excellent. You know, squeezed the ball in. Did a lot of things very well there. Run checks were good. And then the rest of the half, they were just on the edge of breaking plays over and over again. But most of that first half was really not on Golson. There's some busts on the offensive line. There were there was one point where Dalvin Cook stepped out of bounds on what was a sure touchdown run at that point. There were a few misses, but overall I thought he played pretty well in the first half against Boston College. I'd give him maybe a B plus again against Boston College. And that's a very good Boston College defense, by the way. So, you know, give him a B in that first half. And then the second half, the wheels came off. I thought in the second half, it wasn't as bad as South Florida, but it wasn't good. He was missing run checks again. There were some situations where they had a zone read call or a read option call where he's got a keep option and he needed to keep it. And if he keeps it, he might still be running. But again, some of that feedback loop started coming back and the frustration of the offense not having any sort, not clicking, got to him a little bit. And, you know, he's very much a moment. If nothing else, Everett Golson is a momentum guy. He's very much a guy who, when things are going to be going great, he's going to be really good. But the concern is, what happens when things aren't going great against a Miami? What happens when the rest of the offense needs him to pick them up when he hasn't been playing great all of a sudden? Is he going to turn that around, or is the offense going to spiral and all of a sudden he turns it over a bunch? So when you add all of those grades up, I would say so far, you know, you're adding up an incomplete, a B, say B, B minus, an F, a B, and then another B, and then a D minus. And I think so far you're probably, I can't add all that up right in my head, but I'd say that probably on the season adds up to a C minus so far. So, you know, I'd say C minus would probably be my grade for Everett Golson so far. And that's the reason why at this point he's kind of on a short leash. I've gotten reports that McGuire has practiced as well as he has since he's been at Florida State the last couple weeks. You know, he's been treating it as though there's been not a lot of pressure on him. And he's been throwing it much more crisply and making quicker decisions in practice, which has been giving Florida State a little bit of a security blanket, because Fisher feels at this point like if Golson isn't going to play at the level that they need, then they can pull him and go to McGuire and expect that they can at least get something out of him, which is something I'm not sure they had that they were sure about that at the beginning of the year. So, you know, that'll be the interesting thing is whether or not at this point Golson, if he does start to go into one of those feedback loops again, if bad Everett Golson starts to come out, how quickly before they bring the hook and they put Sean McGuire in? And if they do put Sean McGuire in, is that it? Or is that a situation where you put McGuire in and so on and let Golson get resettled and then put him back in either later that game or in another game? I don't know. But at this point, Golson has not played well enough to let Florida State fans be confident in what they're getting from him the rest of the year. I think the next couple weeks are going to really show us what we can expect from Everett Golson as a Florida State quarterback, whether he stays even as a starter or whether, you know, the offense starts to click a little bit and now all of a sudden you get good Everett Golson because the momentum is positive and the last play is starting to affect the next play in a positive manner. So, you know, they really still haven't seen a whole lot of adversity. Boston College's defense gave them a little bit because, you know, because they weren't able to make the plays that they wanted to make in some of those cases. But it's going to be interesting to see as the quality of schedule moves up a little bit. It'll be interesting to see in another three games how we grade Everett Golson at that point through those next three. And I think that's going to determine a lot of how this season goes for Florida State from there. Okay, we can go ahead and then move into our second segment, which is going to be a much briefer segment. Again, coming out of the bye week, there's not a whole lot of news at this point to discuss, and we certainly don't have as much to analyze now that we've basically talked the Boston College game and the first three games to death. But I did get an additional question from the Noel Digest premium subscriber board, and I do want to address that, and that brings up a couple other interesting questions that we'll go ahead and wrap the episode with. The first question is, we've seen the light come on for several players on the defensive side of the ball, such as Gio, Hoskins, Brutus, and White. A lot of that seems to be attributed to focusing in on flying to the ball and embodying that every day in practice. A player that I feel would really benefit from this mentality is Chris Kasher, who should be making his first appearance next week versus Wake. And that's actually not the case. He did play in the first two games before missing the Boston College game. But either way, do you feel that he will buy into this mindset and finally produce at a level that we all hoped he would coming out of high school? And yes, we have seen the light come on for a lot of players on that side of the ball. I mean, obviously, Giorgio Newberry is the poster child for this, as is LaMarcus Brutus. Neither one. I mean, I don't think anybody expected either one at this point to be what they are at this point in their careers. Both guys have really taken a gigantic step forward. Newberry has made a real difference at that strong side end position, and he's the ability to rotate reps between him and DeMarcus Walker and then to put them inside in those rabbit pass rushing packages has really made a big difference on this defense. And a lot of that can be attributed to Brad Lawing. I think he's done a tremendous job with those defensive ends, and you can see the benefits of having him working with that defensive line together with Odell Higgins quite a bit at this point. And also there's been a big buy-in across the board on the defense, like this question mentioned, in terms of flying to the ball and the effort level is clearly better than it was last year. You're seeing a lot more hats get to the ball, a lot more guys in the frame when tackles are being made, a lot more defenders in the frame, people running to the football, that sort of thing, than what you saw last year. And there's no doubt that Chris Kasher could definitely benefit from this mentality, but the answer to that question of whether or not I think he will buy into this mindset and finally produce at a level that we all hoped he would coming out of high school is no. I still don't hold out a whole lot of hope for Chris Kasher. Obviously I hope he proves me wrong. I hope he steps in at some point and does exactly what Giorgio Newberry has been doing and suddenly becomes a surprise contributor. But I wouldn't hold my breath expecting for a whole lot from Kasher at this point. He has continued from the beginning to be what, for the lack of a better way of putting it, he's been a knucklehead from the time he got on campus to now. He's missed a lot of assignments. I just don't even really want to get into everything at this point, but Kasher still has a long way to go. Now, I do think what I saw of him in the first two games, he was more productive. He flashed more than I expected him to in those two games. So there may be some contribution out of him this year, but I do not expect at any point that he will produce at a level that Florida State fans hoped he would coming out of high school as a five-star recruit. Four-star, I think, in some services, but as I recall, he was a five-star in at least one service. And I don't think he's going to accomplish anywhere near that. I don't see the explosion level out of him at this point, and I don't see the constant motor that you have to be that kind of player. Fortunately, Florida State has a five-star at that position that is flashing that from day one, and that's Josh Sweat. And you're talking about a guy that's not even fully healthy yet. But I do think the guy that we're going to see more from, who is coming back in his first game, first appearance on the year, and we'll see him starting this week against Wake Forest, is Lorenzo Featherston. And I think he's going to make an instant impact as a pass rusher again, providing some depth at that edge position at that edge position with Josh Sweat and Jacob Pugh and some of these others, providing that kind of length and explosiveness on the edge. And as good as Josh Sweat has been so far, he's still, and I talked about this in the last episode, he still, to me, looks like his stance is holding him back a little bit in terms of explosion off the ball. And he's not quite as explosive as what he will be once he's had a full off season to train and get completely back with his legs underneath him. Featherston is still a little more explosive off the ball in those pass rush situations than what you've got from Sweat. Now, Sweat is a much better three down player. He's going to be on the field more because he's a much more powerful player. But Featherston brings a lot to the table in those situational third down pass rush scenarios. And I think we'll see a good bit of contribution from him on that. And he is a guy that has bought in. He's going to run to the football. You're always going to get a ton of effort from Featherston. If anything, at times the concern with him is that he'll play a little too far out of control. But I think we're going to see some decent contribution from Featherston starting this week against Wake Forest. The second question is there a better chance that this defense finishes in the top 10 nationally or outside the top 40? The tape so far has looked good, but the competition has been, well, are most of us reaching into the Kool-Aid too soon? Obviously, we won't know for sure until Miami comes into town on the 10th, but I would like your thoughts. My basic thoughts are this. I think the defense probably does finish. I think it's more likely that the defense finishes in the top 10 than it finishes outside, you know, say in the top 40, outside, say, the top 20. I think it's almost certainly going to finish in the top 20 in the various important categories nationally. And again, the categories that matter, I'm looking at things like yards per play and, you know, more efficiency categories than, you know, the things play, you know, yards per game, that sort of thing is meaningless. But I think we're going to see this defense finish probably in the top 10, in part because the slate of offenses on this schedule is just not very good, even on the rest of the schedule. Last year's defense faced a pretty good slate of offenses. I mean, if you look through last year, they played a good group. This year, as mentioned in the question, Texas State, actually a decent offense, but a decent mid-major offense. South Florida, no quarterback, at least no quarterback who could throw. Boston College couldn't threaten you through the air at all. Not very good up front. Obviously, they shut them out. Wake Forest, they're gonna put the ball in the air. They throw it 40 plus times a game, but they don't do it all that efficiently. So Miami's the first decent offense, the first good offense, I'll say, the first good offense on the schedule. And then Louisville's offense has been average, if that. Louisville's offense has been average. Now, they've got a quarterback that can give you some trouble with his legs. A couple quarterbacks, actually. They still haven't really settled on what they're doing there. Then you got Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech offensively is not what they were last year. I said that in the preseason, and I'll say it again. They don't have those gigantic mismatches on the outside that will force you to have to cover them differently than what they've got this year. And they also don't have some of the A-back talent that they had last year as well. And I think that they're settling back into a little bit more of what they are. They're still going to put a ton of pressure on you as a defense. But at the same point, I don't think that they are the unstoppable force that they were almost unstoppable at the end of last year. And I don't think they're quite that. I think that's going to be a challenging game for the defense, but I think this defense matches up much better against this Georgia Tech offense with the length and the explosion on the explosiveness, the quickness on the edge, the athleticism on the edge that Florida State has this year, and with how the corners are playing much more physically. I think that's a much better matchup for Florida State this year than it was last year. So I think they'll do fine there. Syracuse offensively is not very good. Clemson, at Clemson, that's a good offense. So that's two, Miami and Clemson. NC State, probably a pretty good offense. We don't really know yet because they haven't played a Power 5 team yet. But probably pretty good on offense. I think they're the third pretty good offense. Then you got Chattanooga, terrible. And you got Florida, who's average offensively. So you don't play any offenses that are really explosive outside of Miami, Clemson, and maybe North Carolina State. So that's all you've got. So just on the schedule, I think the defense is going to end up statistically pretty good. Now, I think the spirit of the question is more along the lines of, is this defense really going to be a top 10 defense this year? legitimately, rather than, you know, just statistically. And I think that's a tougher question. I think they're probably, if I were going to guess, I think they're right on that, right in that area. Again, we don't know for sure because of the quality or lack thereof of the offenses that they played. But in terms of the improvements that I've seen in gap control, in effort, and the athleticism on the edge and the way that the corners have looked, and also the depth that they've got at safety, where they're now able to do things with Nate Andrews and so on that allows that defense to be much more much scarier once you get into long yardage situations. I think this is a top 10 defense, most likely at the end of the year, legitimately, and that means that against this schedule, it may look even better than that. So it's going to be interesting to see whether that happens, but I think that's the more likely scenario at this point. Now, the question is whether or not this offense is going to be good enough to match up, to score enough points that top 10 defense can get them along, to get them to go pretty far. We'll see. And a lot of that goes back to the first segment, where are they going to get out of the quarterback position what they need to be able to score those points? But if this defense plays like it has so far, there's reason to think that they could potentially, they could be playing from ahead most of the year. And at that point, when you're not putting a lot of stress on Everett Golson, or if it winds up being Sean McGuire that takes over, if you're not putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback and you can just ask him to manage the game and hand off with a lead and throw off play action with a lead, well, I mean, then you're looking at a team that could surprise some people. But again, I think at this point, that Miami and Clemson game, those games kind of define the season, because they're the two teams that have explosive enough offenses that they can really give you problems there. And then, of course, I think NC State has stepped forward as a potential third team now that might have the offense to potentially threaten that defense enough to force Florida State's offense to score with them. And that's something I'm not sure that the Florida State offense has in it at this point. But by November, they might. They certainly have the athletes on the edge, and they certainly have the talent on the line, but it just has a long way to go. So it's going to be, I think I'm as interested to see some of the answers to these questions work themselves out as anybody. And we'll definitely be here with you guys for the rest of the year, trying to piece through and analyze what we do see. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on the Twitter machine at Doc Staples. You can also follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And of course, make sure to catch our next podcast, which is going to preview the Florida State Wake Forest game, among a couple other things. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.